boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and all of you other people. We know you're listening. Anyway, this is the Indie Film Review. I am Dan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jared.
Okay, I'm going to have to stop you right there. Listen, now, when I say this, I'm being clinical, okay? And what I need to say is that was terrible. That was the worst thing I've ever heard. It was horse shit, and I think you should give up.
Hold on a second.
I'm being clinical.
I hear what you're saying. I get it. Ready? But I'm doing something brand new, and I'm surprised you haven't noticed this yet, Jared. But
okay,
podcasting is not a visual medium, but I am invisible.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. Clinically speaking, yes, you did turn invisible, but no one can see that because this is an audio medium.
But isn't it impressive?
It's horseshit.
You can't see me. Aren't you having a good time looking, not looking at me?
Anytime I'm not looking at you, I'm having a great time. Clinically, in a clinical sense, you can't be offended by that. Hey yes. Guys, welcome to the Indie Film Review. As always, that may make more sense as we go and yes. Review this film that we've watched. Dan, how you doing? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And as always, it's a treat for the ones who have already seen the film, which is probably a number I can count on one hand.
It's okay. So we're here to watch Sawgrass, and that's not even almost to go against the film itself. It's just this film is so niche, and
extremely niche,
abstract, that
he needs a podcast like us to get it out there. He needs the Indie Film Review bump, and we're gonna give it to him. I'm sure some people have seen it, but the joke there was no joke. I'm just saying that not everybody who watches Sawgrass is going to listen to our podcast. That was my meaning. Not nobody watched this movie
because people did. A lot of people have seen this film.
I didn't look at the view count. How much was it?
12K from what
Damn,
I saw.
Damn, son. Good on you, Jack. Jesus.
Yeah, a lot of people saw this movie. A lot of people liked it, too.
Well.
So, yeah, we're here to talk about Sawgrass. It is a YouTube film done by Everglade Media. And let me get the... by Jack Peterson is the name of the guy.
Jack Peterson.
So, this film has so many interesting unravelings to get into.
Oh, my God. We still have to cover dance, though.
Yes. Yes, so you're right.
Before
you're right.
We get into Sawgrass, we're going to put Sawgrass on hold for about, like, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes. And then we're going to go full-blown Sawgrass. But for now, Jared, we're going to talk about a little short film submitted to us called Dance.
Dance 2018. It was done by John Michael Triana. Dan, do you have the Vimeo pulled up? Because you could just read the description here.
A silent film for the digital age, Dance explores the impacts of the digital age in the realms of self-perception, love, and desire. Max, our antihero, is paradoxically consumed by both self-centeredness and an existential loneliness. Having ceded control of social interactions to self-promotion in his perfectly curated world of social media, he finds himself craving something more. He meets Bliss, an enigmatic beauty who is seemingly everything he has been searching for. But as Max comes to realize he's chasing his own projection, he begins to question what is real and is faced with a choice. Does he dive back into the digital abyss or pursue a more classic means of finding love?
Bum, bum, bum.
I probably should have read that prior to watching this film.
Yeah, right?
Because at first, I couldn't stand this film, but it's a very, very specific thing to me only. To me only. Let me preface this by saying I like this film a lot, but it took a while for me to start liking it because I can't stand it when little text bubbles come on screen and the dialogue is through text.
Oh,
it's just that's a pet peeve of mine.
I didn't mind that at all.
That's a pet peeve of mine. I hate it when movies do that, but this whole film is comprised entirely of that. And the more I watch it, the more I'm like, oh, I'm starting to realize what the point that he's trying to go for is.
Yes. I thought it was done in such a great way, though.
It was. It was done. It was probably one of the better ones I've seen, for sure. And what makes this film is, I'm going to spoil it, the last 2 minutes.
Okay, well, right before you do that, I just want to say I really enjoyed this short. This short is fantastic. I thought it was just well done in every single aspect. It seems so high quality and high budget.
Exactly.
It was weird.
It was fantastic. The cinematography, especially. And then some of the mise-en-scene, like the club he goes into, was just phenomenal. But
yeah, and the lighting and everything about it was great. The only thing that was distracting to me is how attractive everyone was.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a weird complaint. Yeah. I'm just like, why is everyone so attractive in this? Because it, for the subject matter of a guy on dating apps trying to find his new soulmate, because it alludes to him being with a girl who he thought he was going to be with forever, and then that kind of went away. It seems so relatable to me, and I'm sure a lot of other people who will watch it. But then you see these super attractive people, and you're just like, they don't need help dating.
Well,
like, this guy can find any girl he wants at any time.
Everything is what am I trying to say? Everything about this film has an amazing social media message, and it's
yeah, for sure.
It's split between, should I continue on my social media outings and just live in this digital sphere, or should I try to reconnect with this girlfriend that I had at one time? And I liked how we got to know the girlfriend through his archived messages. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what's really phenomenal about the film is just the pacing of it, just how everything I feel like I'm contradicting myself, because I don't like the text message thing, but as I got to know it, I started to appreciate it more. You know what I mean? So,
would you say you're being clinical about
it? I'm being clinical, yes. clinically, it's just, I don't like the text messages, but you can definitely tell what the title means. Like, he's dancing in this world of social media and trying to find...
back and forth of these two characters trying to go on a date together, because he keeps accepting dates for this woman and
she keeps
and like, hey, yeah, and yes. And I love the idea of this, of him like trying to pursue this long-term relationship in a space like of like a Tinder or whatever, where that isn't like the accepted norm. Usually people are using it for hookups or like this dating thing. And it like with like an attractive young guy like him with, you know, like all these attractive young ladies, usually that's kind of what they're doing at, you know, that time in their lives where they're just kind of they're just jumping around dating and not really committing to anything. But he's like, I want to have a lasting relationship.
Yeah.
And then he has that mindset while still, he'll still look at other girls and do other things. And it's like, is he doing that because he is still trying to find the one, or is he just obsessed with the social
media
aspect?
Is it an addiction? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Is he obsessed with taking the pictures and all that other stuff? And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so good. I love that.
But outside of that narrative, the visuals in this movie are so stellar and impressive, because you get to see what he does for a living. Or, well, not for a living, but in his free time. Like, he goes to the gym, he swims, and we get really awesome shots of him swimming and just these abstract shots of bubbles and whatnot.
Well, when he's at the gym and he's working out and he sees the girl on the treadmill,
oh, yeah,
that's such a relatable thing to me.
Because
I'm sure every guy that happens to when they're at the gym. And then it, like, zooms in on this girl's butt because he's staring at it. But, like, it does, like, the red lighting and everything of, like, oh, it's so weird. I love it. It was really good.
But, like I said before, what makes this film beautiful to me is you have all that precursor that we just talked about. And then the last 2 minutes where the credits are rolling is the character, well, his name is Max, but it's John Michael Triana starred in it as well. That was John Michael
Really?
Triana. Yeah.
That was him?
Yeah, so he has a 2-minute dance number at the end where he just lets loose in this completely physical, absence of digital dance number where he's just he's expressing himself and smoking a cigarette at the same. It was so fucking good. I don't know. Just that 2 minutes great. Was defining the film to me. It made awesome. So much sense.
But I feel like what he's dressed in, he's in like that Hawaiian type shirt or whatever with the chain and everything. If you saw me do that, it would be hilarious. It would be the funniest fucking thing you've ever seen in your life. But when you see John Michael Triana do it, it's fucking cool.
Yeah.
And it's stylish and you're loving it. But I really had no real qualms with this movie. And the whole clinical thing is a gag for Sawgrass. It's a character I'm making fun of. You'll understand soon enough.
We'll get in there soon.
But man, I loved it. Gosh, this is so good. And he's got other films too.
I'm going to check them out then.
On Vimeo. So if you guys want to look this up, Dance 2018 on Vimeo, please go watch it.
Oh, sweet.
It's really
he
good.
Made the credit sequence its own thing, so I can just watch that forever.
Yeah. You can watch your boyfriend.
I can watch my boyfriend.
Oh,
my man crush.
He only dances for me. But yeah, thank you so much, John, for sending that to us. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm actually very surprised that I enjoyed it. Because like I said, I was kind of off-put at the beginning because I just hate that when I see it in films. But then I'm like, God damn, this is really
deep.
So
he made you like a type of filmmaking that you normally don't like. Wow. That's
something
that's
because...
Good. That's strong.
I'm a really big fucking film stickler.
A film jerk.
A film jerk.
A clinical film
A clinical
jerk.
Film jerk.
I should...
God, we
have to stop saying clinical.
No, we should not stop saying clinical. We have to get into Sawgrass. John Michael Triana, you're fantastic. Submit more films to us. We might review one of your films in the future, but we gotta...
Absolutely.
We gotta bite into this fucking meat of Sawgrass. So...
Guys, it begins.
Jared... We're going to start with questions. And I have a very important one
for
you because...
No. You're not getting away.
Oh,
with you're
having
not getting
to explain
away
what this is.
That's right.
All right.
Dan Danerson, you must explain what Sawgrass is
okay.
to everyone
I can do
right
this.
Now.
It's actually quite simple, really. So...
Okay.
Oh, you sounded like you're...
Famous last words.
No, okay, so Sawgrass is a very avant-garde film. I'm going to throw that out there first. So it's comprised of two different things. Well, let's say three different things. Driving around...
Yeah, it's a lot of different things.
Driving around Orlando, Florida. There's a lot of driving around. Interviewing Stephen Paddock's brother, Eric Paddock. Stephen Paddock is the infamous mass shooter from Las Vegas a year ago.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Something like that. Anyway, the filmmaker is interviewing Eric Paddock just about life, and you have that. And then you have animated sequences that feature a fucked up looking Mickey Mouse and a fucked up looking Minnie Mouse trying to aid this other fucked up looking creature named the Traveler in his existential journey. And that's basically what
Dude,
the film is.
You nailed it.
Yeah,
you
I fucking
it.
Know.
It's
like
so good.
Now questions, Jared. Did you like this film?
Okay.
I'll go first. I fucking love this film.
You loved it?
I loved it. It is exactly what I needed when I watched it. Like, I was just having a rough week, and this fucking Eric Paddock guy comes out and just puts me in my goddamn place outside of the clinical bullshit he was talking about. Like, I ate up every word he said. It was wonderful. And then that it propelled me into... digesting the narrative of this weird traveler character and trying to figure out what his existence is meaning. And then that made me think of, well, what is my existence? And I thought it was so perfect. And there's another scene in this film where he goes to like this old abandoned animatronic place where they're...
Yes.
Oh, that scene was fucking rad. But I will say, there's one scene that really upset me. That I can't say I liked. And it was the 10-minute freeform jazz number where they're just walking through the carnival and the music doesn't stop.
I I will say right now, I definitely skipped some things. And that was
you
one of them.
Are not a like, purist. Jack Peterson, I am your biggest fan. Never mind, Jared.
I five-seconded through some of that. So, okay, here's the parts I liked and didn't like. I love the animation
stuff.
So, wait,
did you like it? You never answered that. On the whole.
I'm telling you right now, it's hard
to say. On the whole, I want to know because, your Preparation H scale of liking.
Stop it. So there were certain aspects of it I loved, and there are other aspects of it where I was very bored. So I really went from a strong range of feeling very engaged to checked out emotionally. This film made me feel very uncomfortable and
uncomfortable.
Uneasy. And I think that's kind of what the film is going for. Like, the film is more tonal than anything.
Well, now...
because if you can't really decipher what the film's dialogue is trying to tell you, and I really do think it's just more of the theme of feeling, how the movie makes you
feel. I'm glad
you
brought that up, and it's no fault of Jack Peterson, and I'm sure because he's an experimental filmmaker. Well, maybe not, because he said this was his first film, and he just wanted to make it. But... from my experience in studying experimental film in film school, what's important about experimental film is your body becomes what is experimented on. You have to pay attention to what you feel while you're watching an experimental film, and that's where you get the meaning from it. And yes, those boring aspects of it, I had those boring aspects of it, but it's part of the whole package, which is why with experimental films, those are definitely some that I would never, ever fast forward through. Because... you need to experience the entire thing.
Mm.
Now, you're not demonized just yet, because I'm sure you said you did like some of it, but...
the only real spot I fast-forwarded through was that exact scene you said.
Oh, the 10-minute
jazz,
freeform jazz
walking at the fair or whatever. That was really the only scene. Because I was like, this is going on for so long.
Now, I'm not
going
to say that I wasn't tempted.
I can't deal with it.
I'm not going to say I wasn't tempted. But it was a rough sit through because it's free form fucking jazz, and it's just insane improvisation that doesn't make any sense, and it goes on for 10 minutes and then 5 minutes and you're like, did the song change? And no, song didn't change.
I will say though, I liked the soundtrack.
Oh yeah, no, the soundtrack is fantastic.
It's probably the strongest thing about the movie.
Well, no, not the strongest thing.
Well, there's some really good visuals too. It's this film. I feel like Jack Peterson is he is so close to having this movie be more accessible or be more of a success. I really feel like he's on to a lot of things. For like a first film, there's some really interesting things here. Like he does some interesting stuff with like having a TV floating in. So there's like a real world shot and then he has like an animated TV. And then within that
is another real world shot.
Another image with audio coming out of that. So like we're watching the TV, watching that. Yeah. And that's like trippy. It's weird.
Next level shit.
I enjoyed stuff like that.
Next level shit is what it is, Jared. Yes. Jared, do you have a question for me?
So, yes. Did you, what did you think about Eric Paddock and this interview?
So I did a little bit of research about it. So we know that he was the brother of the shooter in Las Vegas. And apparently he kind of got somewhat famous by saying that the police officers were dumb motherfuckers. And he was very critical of law enforcement in response to what this is. So you can say Eric Paddock has a very set way of looking at things. And he's very vocal about it. But he's also very, like, he's a self-proclaimed conservative, but he's also very much into the arts and very much into just the philosophy of his own life. Like, he sets a philosophy, tries to follow it, realizes his philosophy fucked up, and then he's like, well, I got to do something new now. And he plans stuff and thinks through his whole life. And that I really admired in him.
Okay. Do you think it worked with the animated sequences?
I thought there was a really great connection there, yes. Because
originally, this film was not supposed to have that interview at all.
Really?
It was just going to be the animated sequences, yeah. And it was supposed to be about living in Florida. So it's the film is a very personal one, mm-hmm. according to Jack Peterson, and it's about him basically in the last 10 years of his life
living in Florida, living in Central Florida, yes. specifically. And that's something that I think that yes. both you and I know, because we both lived in Central Florida for what, yes. fucking 18 yeah. years.
I knew immediately as soon as they started showing like the Everglades-y type of stuff. I'm like, is this in Florida?
Oh yeah,
it's in Florida.
Oh, there's this fucking like, oh, beautiful okay. shot. It's him going down this road at night, and I think it's raining because the windshield's kind of foggy, and the moon is so mm-hmm. bright, but because the windshield's foggy, it's like this foggy-looking moon, and I could have stared at that for hours. It was amazing.
Let's do some pros and cons okay. for this. So, okay, my pet peeve, if we'll talk right, about
yeah, go for it,
is I am not into filming driving sequences, and by that I mean... when the camera is just pointed forward and you're just driving and filming, it's not good to me. Other aspects, like I said, like the animation, and even though it's going to become very apparent that I do not like this Eric character, Eric Paddock drove me crazy.
Really?
But I was also very compelled to listen to him.
Yes, he has that draw. And I
he
ate
was infuriating,
it up.
But also I wanted to listen to
I
it.
I ate it up, and you had the opposite reaction. That's interesting.
Mm-mm. He is like a car wreck to me. He's like a... because he equates things... he talks about car wrecks a lot. And he has an obsession
with what, like, some psychologist, like Jack Stevenson
yes,
or something.
I'll talk about him, too. Don't worry. We're going to get into all of that. Don't worry. All of that will be revealed. Oh, big sighs from Jer-Bear. Okay, so is there any other aspect of the movie you would like to talk about before we get into the Eric segment? like about the animation or anything like that?
Well, I mean, so the animation consists of this weird-looking dude called the Traveler, and his brother, the Settler, sends him on a mission yes. to retrieve something. Mm-hmm. And he goes to a different dimension and he finds these Mickey people, and the Mickey people are like, we need you to find us a box. And he's like, okay, where's the box? What I love about the Traveler so much is his whole dialogue is comprised of questions. A character mm-hmm. will say something to him and the Traveler immediately asks a very provocative question. And that's how the dialogue exchanges go. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into the forest because apparently a bear is supposed to give him the box. And then he goes to see the bear, and the bear's like, you were tricked. You need to stop being tricked so much, you dumbass. Or was it the...
Yeah, oh, I loved it where there were like three stuffed bears, like yeah. stuffed animal bears. And he goes, say hello to my three children yeah. or whatever. And he goes like, hello. And the bears say nothing.
Exactly.
Just stuffed animals.
And then, well, or is it the Star Princess? I think it was the Star Princess that says, you are tricked too much.
The Star Princess is probably one of the coolest scenes yeah. for me. I thought that was really fucking cool.
So, before we continue, everything that we're saying, I imagine, if you have not seen this film, sounds fucking insane. So, I recommend this film. I think people should watch okay. this. I was on the fence, like, saying maybe I can't recommend it because it's such a niche film and only certain people would appreciate it, but...
That's how I feel. Like, I feel like it's very hard for me to recommend.
Exactly. I thought about it. I thought really hard about whether I should recommend this or not, but I don't give a shit. Like, I'll recommend it to people and they can turn it off. They'll make their own decisions.
Okay. Okay. And even though I would not be able to recommend it, I still found a lot of enjoyment out of this film.
Absolutely.
For sure. I was so shocked and surprised by like the different things that he had filmed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is in the movie? What the fuck? Like the whole interview thing? I had no idea. Because when I skimmed through this movie and I somehow managed to miss all of the interview stuff before I watched it. Because I'm like, let's see what this is about. And I saw the animation. I'm like, this is cool animation.
Yeah, me too.
I really did not know
that Eric Paddock was going to be in the film. But before we get into Eric Paddock, there's one more thing that I wanted to talk
sure.
about. Is he gave lines to people on the street to act for him.
Yeah.
Those scenes were awesome too.
Some of those actors were actually very
yeah.
good. Other times where they just had like They have like the old man and the boy that where they were just reading off the cards.
He's like, okay, you're going to play Arnold. And he's talking to the old man. And he turns to the young kid. He's like, and you're going to play the old man.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little strange. But that's this movie. It's strange.
And then could forget the amazing animatronic? I mean, I already said it, but the animatronic sequences where he's just like kind of looking backstage at the animatronic. And then he rounds it out at the end with a credit song.
The ending is fantastic.
So
the ending is
all the animatronic people or all the animatronic animals, they're in a band together and they're singing The Romantics, Talking in Your Sleep, and it's fucking wonderful. Yeah.
But the way they do it is it ends with the Eric interview and him critiquing the interview and saying how shitty it is.
I love that.
And how much, how bad Jack Peterson is at interviewing.
I love that.
And then he kept that in the film. And I'm like, oh, this is great. This is so good.
It is. It was wonderful. And then
I watched the ending twice.
Yes.
So I loved it so much. I thought it was great.
We should talk about Eric Paddock and the way you want to talk about him.
Okay. So it's difficult because Eric Paddock does complete this film. It somehow makes sense for him to be in the movie. But then I also don't ever want to see him film again. Because he gave me emotions. Like, he made me feel like anger and confusion and annoyance. But it works so perfectly with the movie, and I don't know if that was the intended response. So from what I understand, Jack Peterson, he had seen Eric give this 30-minute interview about his brother where he just rambles on like just a fucking crazy person to the media. And the media just sit there and record everything he says. And he makes fun of the media in this movie. He's like, they're a bunch of idiots. They don't know what they're doing. They just let me talk and talk. And I'm like, no, dude. They know exactly what they're doing. They're letting you, a guy who sounds crazy, say whatever he wants. Because if you say something nuts about your brother or anything, it's going to be the best TV anyone's ever watched. Because the shit that this guy says is just out of control.
But I like that.
I don't even know if Jack had to even interview him or if he just kept talking for an hour and he just filmed it.
I had a sneaking suspicion about that as well.
Do you feel like Eric is a narcissist?
Yes.
Or has some kind of psychological disorder?
Absolutely, yes.
Where he cannot feel human empathy.
Well, let's just, like, think about, it might be genetic. Like, you know, his brother, his other brother, I learned, was caught up in a pedophile ring.
Yeah, so there's that, and then their father was a bank robber.
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
So their whole family is fucked up. But yet he views himself as like a super IQ genius.
And he has
that
children.
No one can touch. And he is like the greatest. He thinks himself as like the greatest person ever. And he keeps comparing himself to Jordan Peterson, who is a psychologist, I believe. So, okay, Jordan Peterson, let's talk about him. He got famous. He is a conservative motivational speaker that he's wrote some self-help books. And apparently he's helped a lot of people. I don't really know too much about him. I don't want to get too much into him, but he keeps comparing himself to this guy who sounds way more successful than him. But like, there's points where he says like, Mr. Peterson should put this in his book, or he should like write about stuff that I say, you know, like basically saying shit like that. Oh, God, Eric drives me crazy. So I've written a bunch of different spots of what Eric says, and we're just going to go through
them. All right.
Kind of like what I did with Loquacia.
Okay.
And how about you as the audience? You be your own judge, even though I've been already biased by it from what I've said. I may have swayed people's opinions already. Okay, so let's get into it. Eric Paddock, the brother of the spree killer who killed 58 people.
The most deadly shooting in the United States.
Yes, in Las Vegas. Okay. The first thing he says is that he is a D-grade celebrity, which is kind of like a humble brag, where he's saying, like, I'm not important. I don't know why you're interviewing me, but also I'm a celebrity. And And he is a celebrity because he says he got 3 million views on YouTube for his 30-minute rant interview. Of which people just endlessly made fun of him because he is a crazy person. Then he says...
Hold on. I have a comment about that.
What? Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yeah, stop me
at
any time.
He is in a movie.
I think now he's maybe more famous, at least for being in this film. Do you think he's seen this movie?
I hope so. I sincerely hope he has seen this movie.
I bet you he could not get past the first 5 minutes.
I guarantee you he couldn't get past the first 5 minutes.
There's no fucking way he watched this movie. And then I wrote, Eric wants to be as famous as Jordan Peterson. Says he's just like Jordan Peterson, except not a psychologist. All right. Here we go. The only reason Eric decided to talk to the media is because he decided it was the right thing to do. Jordan Peterson should teach people about this. You know, drawing a cross on a piece of paper, very simple. When you write down all the pros and cons, everything just becomes a lot clearer. So his, like, big advice is, like, weigh the pros and cons of talking about your serial killer spree murder brother to the media. And does it benefit you? He talks a lot about, like, doing things that only benefit him. And the only reason he's doing this is because, like, he's bored. And it might benefit him in some way.
Well, see, I like that.
Even if that's true... But even if that's true, why would you say that to the interview? It's just such a weird thing to say.
It was a ballsy response. I just liked that. Like, there are certain things that I did not agree with. Like, what you just said in terms of the weighing the pros and cons. Like, fuck that. I don't care about weighing pros and cons because I only see cons ever. But him just talking about how he traversed his life. Maybe I just got caught up in his joie de vivre or something.
Charisma.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I couldn't stop listening to him. And there were certain parts where he got so heated that the animation kind of interrupted him. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, oh, shit. This kind of applies to the animation.
I mean, he's a wild guy, and I understand why he wanted to interview him. And I wouldn't be against this filmmaker just finding more weirdos like this and interviewing them and doing similar style of, like, just let this crazy guy just say whatever he wants. And I'll try to make some sense out of it. Oh, so I think the whole thing divorced of this Eric guy you have these characters of the settler and the traveler. It seems like the settler is trying to figure out stuff about his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to understand what he's supposed to be doing. And he needs help, and he's going and he's finding these role models or these people who he thinks are going to help him. And then when he meets them, they're not like how he thinks they are at all.
Right.
And they're not helping him, and the world is just way harsher and more confusing than he thought it was going to be. And he's being tricked and manipulated and lied to. And I thought all of that was very interesting. Like, I just want to give more credit to the whole animation and everything else. Now, there's a big thing we haven't talked about yet.
Oh.
Which I didn't find until I did hours of research after I watched this movie.
About 2 hours, yeah.
Yeah, like, I wanted to do other things, but I got so sucked into this weird drama of this, like, why would he interview this guy and everything else. So, the filmmaker himself is an incel.
Really?
And
I didn't know that.
He is an ex. He's not anymore. And he had went on several news outlets, I guess, or something like that. And did like a 30-minute interview after some of the incels from that group had killed people.
Mm-hmm.
And after that had happened, he's like, oh, I don't want to be a part of this group anymore. Like, I don't want to be a part of people getting murdered and, like, killing people. So he disavowed them and then and went and did this interview about it, how he used to do it and how he felt, like, very alone in his life and isolated and everything else. And how he's trying to get better, and how he's stepped away from that. And so when Eric says that he's fucked up, but then he's like, but I'm only saying that in a clinical way. I'm like, oh, that's what he is talking about. Because Eric also refers to him as, like, he has done something bad. And I'm like, what did the director do bad? And I guess it's that incel thing that he was involved in. So it's like, okay, that's starting to, guess, make a little more sense. But then Eric is like, the filmmaker doesn't mean anything to me. And he's like, you are one of the people who don't mean anything to me. He's like, this could be mildly amusing, or I could just use you as a tool. So it's like, these are thoughts that maybe you think in your head, but never say to people. Because it makes you sound like a disgusting asshole that no one wants to be around, clinically. And, right? I don't know. Okay. Let me try to get into some more of this. He's not an optimist. So he hates optimists. He hates empathetic people, which I could go on and on about how weird it is to live your whole life not being empathetic. That's what makes me think he's a narcissist, because like that is a classic thing that a narcissist would say and do. Like they don't have any empathy for other people. And then he says he likes to prepare for shit to go down. And I wrote kind of like his brother.
Shit.
He likes to really respond to shit when it goes down. He says, I'm very good at making decisions in my life because I have a lot of practice doing it. And he's fixed all of his problems in his life. And I'm like, oh, well, have you?
I will say I liked that. I like the attitude of his, I'm old. He's almost 60 years old, or he is 60 years old. Mm-hmm. And he's made so many decisions in his life that he is proclaiming himself to be good at making decisions. And he's comparing himself to other people. He's saying that human beings suck at making decisions.
Which is kind of ridiculous. I don't know. I feel like with age, you can still make a lot of bad decisions all the fucking time.
I agree with that, but I like his
what I have a problem with is how pompous he is.
Yeah, I like his bullheadedness. And like, I like that arrogance in that remark specifically. I hate arrogant people, but whenever he's talking about making decisions and being arrogant about it, I'm like, that kind of makes sense.
It's weird just because his life seems so terrible, and he puts it all out there of how ridiculous and like bad everything has been. And then he says like, I'm a genius and I'll take an IQ test right now to prove it. And no one's even asking him. No one's even questioning his intelligence. He's like, I have to tell you how important and special and awesome I am. That shit drives me fucking crazy because I've known people like that. Where the first thing, when you first meet them, they're like, I need to tell you exactly how much money I make and how big my house is and how smart I am. And I'm like, dude, I don't even know your fucking name. And you're telling me all this stuff? I'm like, I never want to talk to you. Because he defines himself through all of these things instead of like just his personality and himself. That shit drives me crazy. I hate it. So then he starts getting into the bell curve. Do you know what that is?
I think I know, but refresh my memory.
Okay. I had to look it up. So that is it is a mathematical thing, but it is also a book that some guy wrote about human intelligence.
Yeah, okay. I know what it is.
It plainly states in it that people of color and Jewish people are of lower intelligence. So the whole thing that it quotes is, okay, I'll read it. The authors argue that human intelligence is substantially influenced by both inherited and environmental factors, and that it is a better predictor of many personal outcomes. And it goes on and on. So, okay. Inherited and environmental.
Yes.
So I can understand the environmental part of like, okay, if you are in a low-income family and you're going to have less opportunities for a better education. So that kind of makes sense to me. But then they get into inherited, where they're like, if you are not of the correct race, you are going to be statistically dumber than, let's say, a white person. And there's that undertone of what Eric says that also was driving me crazy.
No, see, I didn't pick up on that undertone.
Okay. And... Oh, boy. And he says a lot of stuff like that. He mentions Jewish people at one point. Let me see if I can get to that. He talks about him being an alcoholic, how he got arrested. He calls the Old Testament a hygiene book of the Jews. Jewish people were so bad that they needed a book to teach them how to behave. Yeah, he says that in this movie. And then my joke is, right after he would say that, he'd be like, but please buy Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules of Life, available now on Amazon Prime. If you use the promo code Jew Hygiene Book, you'll get 10% off. Wow, what a deal.
Jesus Christ, you're right. Maybe I was just so compelled by him. Like, he's just, you can't stop listening to this guy.
No, Dan, I completely understand why you're enamored with this guy, because he has a charisma, and he is very fascinating to be filmed and listened to. I was glued to my fucking seat listening. I'm like, what crazy shit is this guy going to say next? Oh, so I talked about his IQ thing. He says he's smarter than the average bear. He says you can't be Eric and not be above average smart. And then he says if you're on the wrong side of the bell curve because you're not smart, you basically need the group to help you with welfare. So he's saying all dumb people are poor and all smart people are rich, which I think is fucking ridiculous. There are so many dumb people I know that are swimming in money. And think of all the like different celebrities or people that are in the news where you're like, how the fuck did this guy get so much money? Couldn't you be born into a lot of money and then have better privileges and be able to get sent to Yale?
He was very forthright about his white privilege as well.
Yes, but I think that's a trick. I think when people do that, they're like, they say shit like that so they can justify all the bad stuff they're about to say. They'd be like, I'm not racist because I have a black friend. And also, I'm going to go and start talking about some crazy racist shit right now. I must be one of those bleeding hearts he talks about who have feelings and emotions. And then he talks about how like his open shirt in the interview was all planned. That I thought was kind of fascinating. He's like, but like, why would he have his weird open shirt for this like young man he's trying to do the interview with? Oh, okay, here's the biggest thing, and I'll shut the fuck up. I swear to God, I will. He tries to defend his brother's killing spree. Unprovocated. No one even asked him. A lot of the things he says, no one is asking him to say. He just says it randomly. He equates it to car crashes.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't care about these victims at all. First he says he doesn't care. Then he says he does. So I'll at least say that. Then he says he doesn't again. It's weird. And he's like, people die all the time. So why should I care about what my brother did to take all these lives away? And he thinks that the media or politicians are disingenuous when they say, like, when they cry on camera, when they're upset about people dying. And to an extent, I understand what he is saying, where, like, I think a lot of that can be disingenuous. But the issue is, okay, so someone dies in Japan, and someone I don't know, and I've never heard of, and it's like, local man dies in Japan. I'm probably not going to feel too bad about it, right? I'm like, okay, that's sad, but I don't know that guy. Now let's say it's my brother who's killed 58 people. Maybe I'll feel, I don't know, maybe I'll feel a little bad about that. Maybe that'll actually trigger some kind of emotional response in my body. And for him to like equate that with like, Why don't the media and politicians cry at every single person who has ever died? It's such a weird, broad thing of saying, like, I don't care about this because people die all the time so much that if I was being actually genuine, then I would be crying nonstop every day for all the people that have died.
Right.
And the circumstances of what your brother did, I think, is a little more severe and close to home than...
Well... I don't want... Okay, because I said I was enamored with this guy. I want to make it clear that this part of the interview, I did not necessarily... Well, I didn't agree with, period. It was just... I know how to make my own opinions. And the minute that he said that people die in car crashes and he compared that to mass shooting, I'm like, eh.
It's so different.
It's completely different.
I think he thinks in black and white. He thinks of like, okay... The off switch is not caring. The on switch is caring about every single thing ever.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not how life works. you weirdo. Like, if your wife died, would you be like, I don't care because people die every day in car crashes, so who gives a shit? What a crazy thing to say. You know what I mean? Like, that's why, many reasons, but that's one of the main reasons. And Dan, I do not fault you at all for enjoying this, guys, because there were many things I was, like, into about this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, this is fascinating. But then he would say some shit like that. And don't even get me started on him trying to talk about white privilege or any of that other fucking shit he tried to talk about. We're not even going to go there. It's fucking ridiculous shit. So what I'm hoping is that the filmmaker wasn't thinking of this Eric guy as, like, the person he was seeking for answers. Or right. Maybe he did. And then when he found him, he was like, oh, this guy is totally different than what I thought he would be. And he's not giving me the answers I want. Because that would reflect if, like, what's going on in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
Dan, would you like to talk?
I mean, we are running long, so
I know. That's why I'm like, we should just end this now. I just hope I was clear with what I'm saying.
I think you were. I think this was a really good conversation.
Like, Dan, I was not trying to trick you or anything, because I didn't want to make you feel bad that you enjoy, because I really enjoyed it too.
No. I completely agree. Like you said, he says a bunch of really fucked up shit, and I know where to draw the line where my opinion goes. So
yeah,
but I think your assessment of him being very black and white, I picked up on that too. So
yeah. Oh, I'm just another triggered. Bleeding heart piece of shit.
You snowflake. You
I'm
libtard.
A god dang snowflake. That's right. Ooh, baby. Okay. Dan, please do plugs. I can't talk anymore.
Okay. You may find us on Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You may find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review. You may find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can find us on Facebook. Just search us Indie Film Review. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. We are hosted by Podbean. That is indiefilmreview.podbean.com. And of course, as always, the beautiful, the voluptuous, the sexy, the oh my god, I'm going to pound the living hell out of you, Necropodicon Network.
Consensually.
Consensually. We are there. You may find us and other great movie podcasts, D&D podcasts, kid podcasts, scary podcasts. Do they have a food podcast yet? Maybe they should find a food podcast.
Food podcast would be fun. I think a video game podcast would be
fun.
Oh,
a video game podcast. Yes. Yeah. We mentioned we want to do a video game podcast at one point. Anyway, that's all she wrote, gentlemen and ladies and gentle ladies.
Okay. Dan, you have the final word.
I hear the secrets that you keep.
That you keep.
When you're talking
when you're
in your sleep.
In your sleep. Me too.